We're joined now by Jerome Loving. His book is Jack and Norman. It's the story of an author and his apprentice. The jury is mixed on Norman Mailer. First of all, why did you embrace this topic?
Well, my interest originated with Jack Henry Abbott rather than with Norman Mailer. I had heard and read some of Mailer during my lifetime. Everyone had heard about Mailer. In fact, you know, Mailer was, you know, like Hemingway or Fitzgerald, he was a nationally known writer, something we don't have today. But when he came upon Abbott and Abbott published in The Belly of the Beast, that book fascinated me. So that was in 81. And then in the 90s, or maybe in this century, Mailer sold his papers to the University of Texas Humanities Research Center. And I went over there to see whether there might be some correspondence with Abbott, and lo and behold, there was a catch of about 50 to 100 letters. So I used that as the basis for the story. It's not an addition of letters, but that's Abbott's side of it. It's a story, basically, of a long-term prisoner of the most famous execution in American history, and this flamboyant, rather well-known author who was known as well for his exploits out of literature as well as in literature. Mailer would go, he went to the famous prize fights with Muhammad Ali and George
Foreman.
He wrote about national conventions, the Kennedy Convention. I've discovered that Mailer, he started out to be a novelist and to write the great American novel, but it turned out he was probably the great American journalist. And when this story of Gary Gilmore came along, he was able to treat it as nonfiction. In other words, treat not just facts, but the stories behind the facts. It's called the new journalism, and that's what he did with the Gilmore in the Execution Song, which was published in 1979, I believe. Yes.
He won the Pulitzer Prize for that. And
his second one, yes.
Yeah, after winning for Armies of the Night. And right. Then he hooks up with Jack Henry Abbott. What compelled him to continue the correspondence with Jack Henry Abbott?
Well, first of all, Abbott got through to Mailer because he had been talking to Jerzy Kosinski, and so he was somewhat known, and he got through. But Mailer read his first letter, and what he found in it, besides he was interested in prison. Most of us don't know about prison. We hear about it, and that was Mailer's situation as well. And what he got was just remarkable prose was the extreme pathos or sadness surrounding imprisonment and solitary confinement, which Abbott did a great deal of. He felt indebted to Abbott. He was almost going to put some of Abbott's words or letters in the Executioner's Song, but he decided that he wanted to keep this directly on Gilmore and also keep himself out of the book, which he had not done with many of his other books. But once he had the book had been published, he even went to Marion Federal Prison to visit Abbott to try to give him a book. But, of course, that was complicated, and he finally got the book. But he felt obliged. Here was this man, the son of an army drunk and a Eurasian sex worker who went through foster home after foster home, then reform schools, and then into adult prison. There, his sister, his half-sister, had gotten a bookstore to send him books, and he read he was qualified probably to teach philosophy at a local college if he'd gotten out, or literature even. And he, Mel thought, here's this man with an IQ of 137. Democracy ought to take another chance on him. And so he got other people in New York, editor of the New York Review of Books, and others, editor of Random House, and they got him out in June of 81. And eerily and ironically, he lasted exactly the same time same length of time Gary Gilmore lasted, which was 6 weeks before killing somebody.
And he stabbed a waiter who, according to reports, had an angelic look on his face as he bled to death from the wounds inflicted by Jack Henry Abbott. What prompted the...
That, by the way, was a description of the detective, William Majeski, a New York detective, who pursued Abbott all the way through Mexico to New Orleans and was mainly responsible for his capture.
Well, what was it that was the catalyst for the exchange between Abbott and this waiter?
Abbott had been out dancing with two young ladies, one from Barnard. One was French, one was Filipino, and exotic women, and they came to this all-night dive on the Lower East Side. There weren't many people in it. Abbott asked to use the employees-only restroom and was refused by Richard Adan, who was the manager. He was managing his father's restaurant. Finally, Adan, to calm him down, although it had the opposite effect, suggested that he go outside. Well, Abbott, being, in my opinion, prison paranoid, took that as, let's go outside. And they went outside, and Abbott went behind the dumpster to relieve himself. But there he panicked. He thought that Adam was going to call the police or stab him with a knife which we never found in that case. And so Abbott came out from behind and with a knife as quickly as, you know, one witness saw Abbott's hair fly back as he darted toward Adan, caught him from behind, practically cut his heart in half. And he yelled to the girls, he killed a man, and he ran away.
And he ended up in Louisiana.
He first went to Philadelphia, then Chicago, then Texas, and then into Mexico, all the way down to Mexico City, hoping to get to Cuba, because he was a communist, and he felt that that was a better society. And when he couldn't get any sort of passage there, he came up to Louisiana and got caught there working in the oil industry.
Making $4 an hour in Morgan City, that's where he was apprehended. And I know that at that time they were concerned that he would kill when he was captured. So they took a lot of precautions, didn't they?
Yeah, they had some cuffs on him. He could be very dangerous. He killed a man in prison, allegedly in self-defense, but it turned out that wasn't quite the case, that the man had snitched on him. He was very fast. In his book, In the Belly of the Beast, he describes how one does it. You hold the shiv straight down by your leg, and you pivot. You aim for the third button on the victim's shirt, and then you turn, and the job is done. So Abbott was, I think, had been ruined in prison. He may have been educated in prison, but he was ruined as well. When he came out, he virtually came from the solitary of Draper State Prison in Utah, solitary to the city, New York City, Lower East Side, not a good neighborhood then. He could have been put on the Upper West Side, but they didn't want him up there. When he was out with his editor from Random House, he was offended by the so-called sluttish dress of women in women jogging in Central Park. He saw these there's a collapsible black umbrellas, and he asked the editor why was the store selling clubs. When he went to a party of writers and editors, he stayed by himself, kept his back to the wall, and only talked to people that he knew. And then the city was really too much for him. I mean, New Yorkers would bump into you and everything else, and in prison you're polite.
Yeah.
Because you're together, and you could be dead if you're impolite, I suppose.
So he goes back to prison, and in 2002, at the age of 58, he takes his life.
Allegedly, he commits suicide. I asked the authorities at Wind State Penitentiary in New York, and they never answered my letter. And they refused to show a supposed suicide letter, so we've never seen that. But
go ahead.
I'm sorry. Well, he describes in the mailer how he would hang himself in a cell, and very poetically in a way, because he says he gets the string up around the light and around his neck, and he almost does it several times, and he said it's like the body fighting against the mind, and then he may have done it that way. Mailer was felt very bad about it, although defensive, and he foolishly thought Abbott should have another chance, but he's considered that one of the great errors of his life. Coincidentally, he too had stabbed somebody. He had stabbed his second wife, almost killed her, in a drunken brawl, and did 3 years on parole back in the 60s.
Yep. You liked Abbott's writing, didn't you?
Yes, I think the man can write, and The Belly of the Beast is quite good. The problem was it was based on the letters, and they lost some letters, and Mailer had to rewrite them. Abbott had to rewrite them. And so the second half falls into a kind of a Marxist rant, somewhat naive, since he'd been in prison for so long and hadn't really kept up with what was going on, I guess. But the first half, or the first two-thirds of the book, are brilliant. And it's probably one of the best prison books that have been written. Well, he talks about things like, you know, when you're in reform school, you're not allowed to be a little boy. You're a boy, you're not allowed to be. In an adult prison, you're not allowed to be a man. Many prisons, you're not even allowed to have a picture of yourself. So he did most of his time. He started out, both Abbott and Gilmore came out of Mormon family relationships, and they're both from Utah. They both went to Draper State.
Well, I tell you what, we do have to roll, but it is a compelling book, Jack and Norman from Jerome Loving. We thank you for joining us today.